Hello, friends. Welcome to another episode of the Liberty Weekly podcast. I'm your host, as always, Patrick McFarland. You can find me at libertyweekly.net or in the podcast feed at libertarianinstitute.org. And I'm here with my buddy, Eric Heiler at Childerberg. How's it going?
Dehydrated.
Yeah.
I feel dehydrated. I've drank a lot of water, but I still feel a little thin.
I feel that. Yeah, I didn't go pretty hard yet, but Robbie the Fire just recorded with the guys from Timeline Earth, so that was really cool. That was a cool treat.
And Ben Swan, so look for that episode when you guys get it.
Yeah. So how has Chili been so far? We're getting the whole authentic experience here.
Yes. Childerberg's been great. Everyone has been really super nice. A lot of sharing and caring going on, which is what you would expect with a bunch of us anarchist types. Getting to see Scott Horton just sit there and hold court over at his little campsite was pretty good. We got everybody running around here. BR hates Fred. Hates Fred is running around at some point. You know, kind of surprised me with his British accent out of nowhere. I was like, oh, hey, how's it going, buddy?
Well, our plan for this episode is to kind of try and capture the ambiance of Childerberg. And so this is going to be kind of like a revolving chair just for this episode. But so I've been told, since this is my first Childerberg, and it's not your first, right?
Yeah, this is my second. I went to the first one. I skipped the second one. Now I'm here.
Okay. Well, I've been told that before it was kind of like a camp atmosphere where there were like islands, but this feels like a festival where you can just kind of wander and stuff. So
yeah, everyone's been wandering pretty good. We've had people come in to this one. We've filtered over there to the Scott Horton camp. So yeah, it's been pretty crazy.
Yeah. So what has been your favorite moment so far, I suppose?
Favorite moment so far is all of us mercilessly mocking Carr at any chance that we get with our little Yemen. So that's been probably the best part. And then doing our little quirks here and there, which you'll probably start seeing in the timeline here pretty soon, with just random sayings from people, and we're just going to post them.
So. No, it's been real cool.
No context whatsoever.
Like, the coolest part about it, and I've been saying this all weekend, is just that to finally meet people that I've known for years. Like, I've known you for a long-ass time.
Right,
and,
yeah.
But it feels like I've been doing this thing lately where I feel like the old man on campus, but I'm not at all.
No.
So, but that's, but I mean, in terms of Liberty podcasting years, it's like a year is 7 years. It's like dog years or
something
like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, there have been like a few times. Like last night, we were around the fire, and Bird was saying like, most of Liberty Twitter is here, so they could wipe us all out in one drone strike right now, just around the campfire.
Every time I hear the plane going overhead, I'm just like, at any moment, that Hellfire missile is coming right for us.
What kind of buzz, though? But so, yesterday was the show at, what's the name of the distillery?
Oh, it's Iron Wolf Distillery.
Yeah. So that was really fun.
Yeah. The music acts right before, and then we had comedy right after that. And we were out there until like, 9:30, 9:45, something like that. Yeah, it was pretty late by the time we got back to camp.
Yeah. Then we all caravan back. I've been behaving pretty well, I'd say. I don't know about you.
I've been okay. I haven't actually had a lick of alcohol yet. Miss Sherry Voluntary gave me some Appalachian cream, which I'm going to be drinking a little bit later. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Cody from Agora Brewing was saying, like, he had us try a flight of whiskeys last night at like 1:30, and I'm just like, oh man, I gotta be careful with that.
Yeah, 1:30 a.m. That's the time to start doing flights of whiskey.
Yeah.
Well, it's all good because I've been administering hangover meds this morning too, so that was kind of fun.
Yeah, the thing for hangover meds has been that body armor, and I usually do Pedialyte, man, so. Having body armor has just been like...
Yeah, I've got a little jar of electrolyte pills.
Oh, okay.
I gave a couple of those out, some aspirin. I was like, okay, I'm taking care of you guys.
Well, I have like the activated charcoal, which I think is really just a placebo.
Probably.
But
so taking you out a little bit.
Sometimes I've taken that shit and I've actually felt worse the next morning. I like to think. So, yeah, but... So who all has been here? I think... I hesitate to name names because I don't want to forget anybody. But
we're going to name drop. I'll say Robbie the Fire was just podcasting. Karin Bird from Timeline Earth. Not Aaron. Aaron's not going to be here. Let's see, who else we got going on? Narcist is here. Ace is here. Nick Ashley is here. BR Hates Feds, I think I mentioned him already. Aches, he's here. And there's like really a lot to name, so I apologize if I missed anything.
Yeah. Well, and we'll, like I said, we'll have an open chair just kind of see, but. Oh, yeah, Scott's here, too. Yeah, and Monica Perez was here yesterday.
Yeah, she was at the distillery. Couldn't miss her. She was her wonderful self.
Yes, most definitely. Yeah, Sherry's here, too. She's around somewhere.
Yeah,
but
I think last time I saw her, she was hanging out with Tommy Salmons over at the Scott Horton camp.
Yeah, so it was cool because, you know, like, I've been on the Libertarian Institute for, like, a year or two now, but I never met Scott before. And so for the first time, I was like, you know, like a lot of people that I interacted with on Twitter who didn't come this year, they were like, oh, well, you know, just isn't going to work this year. I'll do it next year.
Right.
But that was me the first two times.
Right.
So I was like, I got to do something. You know, I got to go. Like,
yeah.
But it's just been incredible. Like, meeting you and meeting all these people is just great. And the conversation has been awesome.
Yeah, we have literally talked about just about everything.
Yeah.
Proudhon got brought up at one point.
Yeah.
Jewish space lasers got brought up at another point.
Oh, yeah.
I remember hearing that. So I was like, man, if only people were just listening to what we're talking about.
Yeah. And it's almost like I feel like an addict because I was thinking like, oh, we got to capture some of this conversation, you know, and so. Yeah,
the podcaster's dilemma. It's like, do I record this or just let it be?
Yeah, just let it be. So I've been a little hesitant to take pictures and stuff because it's like,
yeah, you never can tell because a lot of people, they just go by their avatars on Twitter and their other social media and they don't want their face out there. Carr is one of those. I don't know why. Carr's a handsome guy. You'd want to see Carr's face.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. So, well, you have any topics you want to hit up specifically? Yeah. Well, should we switch the chairs or what do you want to do?
Switch the chairs? Yeah. We can do that.
Okay,
let's do that.
All right, so I'm here with Lincoln. How's it going, man?
Hey, yeah, Lincoln at $5L on Twitter. It's going great, man.
Yeah.
It's going fantastic.
So is this your first Childerberg?
This is my first time at Chile. I wanted to make it out last year, but you know, there's this little thing called coronavirus. I don't know if you heard about it.
Yeah.
And I have this guy who is kind of like declared himself the dictator of our state, California. It's a state.
Heard of him.
Yeah. I might have heard of Gavin Newsom. And for a little bit, he was talking about locking down the state and not allowing travel in and out. And that was right around the time of Chile 2. And I was like, well, if I leave, I might not be able to come back home.
Yeah.
And so I didn't come last year because I was like, well, as much as I hate California, I don't never want to come back because this is where all my family is.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
I get that. You know, it's tough. And it's one thing to, like, you know, talk a big game like, oh, fuck this. You know, I'm going to move out if something happens. But when you got roots in a certain place, it just.
Yeah, when you got roots. I mean, I've come from a place where my family has lived for literally 100 years. So the idea of not being able to go back there is like, oh, shit, I'm not sure that I want to do that.
Yeah.
I swear. Is that all right?
No, it's all good. Okay, it's all good, yeah. Well, I heard you, because I met you for the first time yesterday, but I thought you had a lot of really smart things to say about, like, one thing you said that I remember was we were talking about the lockdowns and everything, and you were talking about, like, the American Revolution and how all of the plotting was taking place in bars and churches.
Correct,
and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I was talking about how isn't it interesting that the places that they shut down are things like churches, bars, small businesses, any place that the average person gathers just to commune and mingle with their fellows. Where was still open? All is the big box stores. You had your Home Depots that were still open, your Walmarts, your Targets, you know, any place that was a big megacorp, so to speak, was still open, and you could go in and out of those, no problem. As long as you wore your mask and you know, obeyed the rules, so to speak, you were totally fine in there. But all the other places, they closed them right down, and a lot of them, of course, aren't going to be able to open back up again. And the reason for that, that we were talking about in that conversation, was that it's those small spaces where people gather to exchange ideas, exchange their thoughts, exchange how they're feeling about the current times, about the current situation. If times are good, everybody's going to the bar to drink and celebrate the fact, hey, so-and-so got a promotion, so-and-so got a big business deal. If times are bad, they're going to drink and say, man, it is tough to meet orders. I can't sell enough stuff because my supplies are pinched. Or saying, man, customers just aren't coming into the store. I don't know how we're going to make rent this month. You know? But they cut all of that off when they closed down these small businesses so that people couldn't talk amongst themselves. So everybody's thinking, well, it sucks for me, but it seems like the news is saying we're holding out okay, so I guess it's going to be fine. You know, it makes it so that the narratives are much easier to buy into because you're not talking with your friends and your associates who might have something contrary to the narrative to say. And I think media narrative is probably the most important thing to come out of the whole COVID thing, because there's about half the country who thinks that it's all complete BS, and another half who is following it hard line without question. You know, obviously I draw the line at half. It's not really that, but it seems very clear. There are certain people who are hard line. We're wearing the masks even after we've gotten the vaccine. And the other half is saying, why are we even getting vaccinated? There's no in between. It's just one or the other. Which, honestly, for myself, I'm kind of in favor of, because I'm an accelerationist.
Yeah.
And so I'm very pro the country dividing. Do I personally think that that will cause problems, the country dividing? Well, yeah, obviously. But I think it's better that we get our problems out of the way now than wait for them to reach a more intense boiling point later. Much rather have people talking secession before violence starts happening than start talking secession after violence starts happening.
Right.
You know, because that guarantees more violence, whereas if we start talking secession and if we start talking people seeking independence and federalizing more before violence start happening, it might actually prevent overflow that is going to hurt people who are just trying to mind their own business.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. And what you were saying earlier, one thing I've always kind of said throughout this pandemic is I wonder how the pandemic would have played out, or if people even would have noticed that it was happening had the news not been talking about it.
Well, you think about the original SARS, right?
Yeah.
But you know, they were freaked out about that for a little bit, but they didn't push that same media narrative, so people didn't freak out about it. Nothing happened. The same with West Nile, right? People freaked out about it. I know somebody who almost died from it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been, 10 years ago or whenever it was when it first started running through people. I mean, it's still around. It's not as bad as it was at that point in time, but it was still around. And even going back further to kind of before my time, so I'm like 27, and you go back to the AIDS epidemic,
yeah.
And people were like, oh, people, and by people, I mean the guy who's still currently in charge,
right.
Anthony Fauci, right? He's like saying, oh, AIDS is going to sweep through and it's going to kill thousands and millions of Americans. And, you know, it affected a few people, right? But you know what? I remember that Magic Johnson had it and he hasn't died from it yet. So yeah. What am I supposed to be worried about?
You know how you fix that? You inject liquid cash in your veins.
Yeah.
Did you see that South Park episode about
no.
it?
Oh, no. Well, I didn't see that one.
That's what I was referring to. But
okay, yeah.
He just...
You know, South Park is great. I just don't watch a whole lot of TV. I watch a few movies. Something about being born in the mid '90s. I'm more of a gamer than I am a TV watcher.
Yeah, so. I feel that.
Yeah.
So you were talking earlier too about people being isolated and stuff, and like I think part of the agenda is to get people in, like no joke, like Matrix style pods.
Oh, like 100%.
Like going all virtual, or like all of that is so emblematic of that.
Yeah, I mean, if they could plug us into the Matrix to make us into like energy cows instead of tax cows, where we have still some level of free thought, I think the powers that be would prefer that. They'd prefer to have us all fall in line, like 100%. So I'm definitely nervous about what's coming down the pipelines, because I think that the authoritarians in charge are going to just want to use it to exploit us even further than we already are.
And that's another reason why I like being here so much, is because it's, you know, it's a white pill. I think I crave white pills in a way, although I have been black pilled a lot in the past on this show, in fact.
I don't disagree. It for me, every other day. Some days I'm black-pilled, but the next day something happens. Like, coming here to Childeberg, huge white pill.
Yeah.
And I'll bet you that on my way home, I'm going to see something like, you know, drone strikes in Yemen,
yeah.
and another 40 kids are left dead. And I'm going to be like, fuck, this really sucks. Like, the empire is still strong. But I look around me here at Childeberg, and, you know, we've got, I don't know, 100 people here scattered around or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think back to, because earlier we talked about the Founding Fathers, right? We talked, and not that I personally idolize them, but I do, I'm interested in revolutionary movements, and I have, of course, being an American, I still have that residual partiality towards them. They were the minority when all that happened, right? And here we have a few hundred people of very intelligent and liberty-minded individuals who are going out there, and they're living their lives, and they're talking to people, and they're spreading the ideas of freedom and liberty, personal responsibility, and opposition towards the empire that we all share in common. And it's a huge white pill because it gives me hope that there's going to be more stuff in the future. For example, another white pill recently was that Michael Malice's book.
Yeah.
That skyrocketed to the top, right? The Anarchist Handbook. It's just a collection of writings from a bunch of long-dead anarchists at this point, right? People are hungry for an alternative solution because they've, especially after living through what has been the most authoritarian year, perhaps, in history. You know, this worldwide just lockdown of countries all across the world. It's not like back in the 60s where the Soviets have control of a huge, you know, they have control of all of northern Asia and parts of Europe, and they're locking it down, or the Chinese control a huge stretch of land and they have it locked down under communism. You know, it's completely different from that. This is the whole world all getting together,
right,
and locking everything down. It's wild. You know, the types of lockdowns that we haven't seen since the last World Wars, which were hugely, you know, catastrophic events in history, right? And what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do? Everybody's asking the question, something's wrong, what do we do to fix it? And they are seeking out... There's certain people out there seeking freedom as the answer. There's certain people who aren't, but there are more people today seeking freedom than there were a year ago, and that is a huge white people. Sure, there's more people today now who are doubling their dedication towards the empire, but even if for every two of those people, there's only one of us, every one of us matters more than 10 of them. You know what I mean? Because revolutions are started by the minority. They're not started by the majority. The majority follows along with whatever's popular. And so the more of us there are, the more liberty-minded people there are, the more people who are opposed to the empire we are, that's the biggest white people. White people? White.
Yeah, that's the second time you said that. I was going to jump in and be like, no, not white people.
I apologize. I've been drinking all day. I'm not all there.
No, I'm just giving
it's
you shit.
It's the biggest white pill that I can imagine. It's
yeah.
So many more people who believe and are seeking freedom than there were 2 years ago. That's wild to me. That's amazing to me. And the biggest white pill that I can imagine. Despite all the black pills around, I think that there is... In the short run, I think that there's major concern. But I think in the long run, what has happened here has made a generation and what will become more generations of people who are willing to stand up to power and willing to say no to those who wish to enslave us.
Well, and I think at some point the government cannot phase away everything that people see with their own eyes, you know, and maybe it'll produce people that are more skeptical towards government messages.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember swine flu?
Oh, yeah, 100%, yeah. I almost brought that up, but I already said SARS and I'd already said AIDS.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's another one in that lit. I think I said West Nile was the other one. You know, it's another one, the litany of things they tried to play the fear card on.
Yeah.
This just happened to be the one that people picked up on.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know what it was either. I mean, like, if you go back, even in January of, I can't remember, January of 2020, yeah, people were still like, oh, that's something happening over there in China.
Yeah.
You know, and my wife actually was someone who said in, like, December, she said, that shit's coming here. Like, you be ready for that. And I didn't even see that. And I got to hand props to her because she was saying that before everybody else was.
Yeah.
And usually I'm the person who's, like, saying the sky is falling, so.
Yeah.
But even I can't remember when the first lockdowns took effect, but even a few days before that, if you would have told me that they locked the whole country down, I wouldn't believe you.
I wouldn't have either.
Yeah.
But I think what I realized from that, now I just talked about white pill, now I'm going to go to a black pill.
Yeah.
What I realized when they locked down, and they locked down for after the 10th day of lockdown, and people were still wearing masks, I was like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
this is never stopping. After the first month of it, I was like, weird, this is not only never stopping, this is now ingrained in the culture, and there's going to be certain people who are going to be wearing masks forever.
Yeah.
And that's kind of wild. That people would buy into that narrative and that belief so strongly. And it's not to say that the virus isn't real. It's obviously very real. I even know somebody who's died from it, right? But for every person I know, for the one person I know who's died from it, I know literally dozens of people who've had it and have been just fine.
Right.
My dad, he has a respiratory problem. And we thought for sure that if he caught it, he was just going to die from it. That was just going to be the consequence. Well, he caught it, and he had sniffle for a week, and then that was it.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, oh, so this isn't the thing that we thought it was.
Yeah. Well, it was so strange, too, because, like, before all the lockdowns and before they said it came, I was one of those people that got deathly ill.
Yeah.
I got ill for, like, a week. I was couch bound. I was so lethargic that I couldn't get off the couch.
Right.
And I didn't think anything of it. I just thought I had a bad, you know, I was
I had
sick.
Something like that in January.
Yeah, yeah.
I was about as sick as I had ever been for, I don't know, a week or so, and then I was fine. I know some people say, hey, maybe you had COVID. And I've never gotten an antibody test or anything like that to check. But I do know that my cousin got the same thing, and I do know another person who got the coronavirus who had the exact same symptoms. It's like, maybe that was it. I don't know, but, you know, I survived from it. Whether it was the coronavirus or some other string of virus, I don't particularly care, because I'm still here. I'm here at Childeberg. I survived it just fine. I was just sick for a week.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember the day of the lockdowns, I said to my parents, I was like, you know, I really hope this doesn't turn into a thing that we remember like 9/11, where it was like, oh, that happened before 9/11, or that was what life was like before 9/11 happened.
I think that that's inevitable because of, you remember the shockwaves that it sent through everyone mentally.
Yeah.
This has sent the same type of shockwave through. We've seen the same type of growth, and I'm going to say same type of growth in government, but I'm going to backtrack on that and say this instead, that it has exposed the size of our government the same way that 9/11 did. Because what 9/11 did, it showed that people were willing to accept the Patriot Act. They're willing to accept the expansion of you know, the TSA and everything else. They were just like, okay, great, let's just do this. This sounds great to us. If the people are willing to say, this sounds great to us, you have accepted a certain amount of slavery mentally that you're just not... That they just haven't exercised upon you at that point. And it's the same thing with the COVID thing. When they locked people down their houses and people said, okay, we'll stay in our houses, it shows that the American people mentally had said, okay, we're acceptable with this level of authority.
Right.
And the thing about government is that it can only ever level the exact amount of authority upon you that you're willing to accept. The thing is the central planners don't know exactly where that level is, so they have a certain level of power over you. They just don't know exactly where the line is. And what this pandemic has shown is that the line is a whole lot further towards them than they imagined in their wildest dreams. And that's why they are I think that's why they're hesitant to pull back on it, because they know they have this power over us. They know that a huge section of the American people accept readily that power that the state has over them, and they're totally fine with it. They're totally cool with it. They embrace it. That, you know, you see people going to get the vaccines in their freaking ball gowns.
Yeah.
It's wild. Like, they're treating it like it's a religion and not... They cry science, 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 but then they act like they're religious about it. It's crazy. So I don't know, man. I just do my best to not let the state have that much power over me personally. But when I see it have and exercise that much power over my neighbors, that's where the black pill comes in, right?
Yeah.
But that's why I'm really happy to be here at Chile, because I see there's not a single mask in sight, right? There's tons of people saying, I'm worried about the vaccine, kind of scared of it myself. There's a ton of people who literally would be happier with the state. I'd say the majority of the people here would be happier with the state to go out of existence tomorrow. And knowing that there's dozens, maybe even 100-some-odd people of those around me right now, that is what is the white pill. That's what gives me hope for the future.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really nice, too, because, like, here, you know, people look after each other. Like,
yeah.
People like me have come without plans of, like, where to stay.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, whether you need ice, or everyone's like, oh, can I get that for you, or how can I help you, pick up after you, or, mm-hmm. you know, each other and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's been really cool. And
I have seen more people just share stuff with each other here than I have in the last year. People are just like, hey, do you need a beer? I've got beer around. Hey. Do you need some more ice? I've got ice. Hey, I'm going on a run to go get groceries. Does anybody need something? Nobody's expecting compensation.
Right,
Nobody's expecting anything in return. Everybody's doing it because the people here are genuinely good people who care about each other and care enough to actually act upon that and do something without being asked.
Yeah.
It's wild, and I love it. These are the best people here at Childeberg.
Yeah.
And so for everybody listening, if you get a chance, you gotta come to Childeberg.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yes.
These are the best people. And also, I will dare say, these are some of the best-looking people. We have some real handsome motherfuckers running around here. We could use some more girls, though. At a libertarian event, unsurprisingly, not a high ratio of men to women. I'm not looking for myself. I'm already taken. Sorry, ladies. But there's a lot of single dudes running around here. And there's some pretty good-looking dudes, I dare say. So.
All right, well, 10 out of 10, Childeberg, I would recommend. Why don't you remind people of how they can follow you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at $5L. That's the number $5L. If I have enough time, because with work and everything, I just have cut off my content creating. But I do have a Substack, and I do have a podcast, Not Another Liberty Podcast, where we don't talk about politics. We talk about pop culture stuff. I just try to get on people from Liberty Twitter and our general movement to talk about things that I don't normally talk about. That's kind of the point of the show. I'd like to get back to it when I have the time, but at the moment just haven't had the time to. But we'll get back to it in a month or so when I get freed up, so expect episodes of that coming up in a little while.
Yeah, well, right on. It's been great to meet you, and I'm glad that we could do this, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's been great.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, for real. Hey, so I got Bird here in the seat from Time on Earth. How's it going?
Extremely good. I just got out of the water.
How is it?
Of Lake Travis. Well, two things. It's great. It's beautiful water. It's a little muddy.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful water, except that there's a rumor going around that there's a brain-eating amoeba in the Colorado River, which is where Lake Travis is located. So if it's like an hour and a half from now, I'm all over the floor, then you know exactly what happened.
Have you ever seen Creepshow?
No.
Oh, it's like this old Stephen King, like, horror comic movie from the 80s, uh-huh. And one of them is called, like, The Swamp or The Lagoon or something, and it's about a bunch of kids that go swimming in a mountain river, and there's this mass, it looks like moss floating on the surface that chases them and, like, melts them. It's fucking cool.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. It is crazy, man. So, like I was saying, like, the first Childeberg was 15 people, as far as I remember, maybe 18 or something. It wasn't many. The second one, which was the coronavirus one, had like 35 people, so it's still doubled. or nearly doubled. This one, I was talking to Jacob the first day that we got here, and by the time that I had gotten there on Saturday around like 2 p.m., he said there were 98 people.
Yeah. Wow.
And I can tell you, when we went to Iron Wolf, which was where we got to see Robbie Fire Bernstein do a great set.
Yes.
Which was, I mean, that price of admission alone, that was excellent. That had got to have 200 people in attendance.
Yeah, there were a lot of people there.
There were more people there than are at the camp, and there's probably 100 people at the camp now on a Sunday, day before we leave.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, it's fucking kind of, it's really weird to be walking around and people are like, I know that voice.
Yeah,
I mean,
dude.
I know that voice. I'm like, oh Jesus, I'm at a disadvantage now.
I woke up this morning and I heard Scott talking to Tommy Salmons.
How weird is that?
It was weird.
Wake up in the morning and Scott Horton is ranting about some shit.
I mean, it was especially because like I was up with him last night, him and Tommy, until like 2:30 in the morning. And when I went to bed, they were still up. And then when I woke up, they were still up.
Tommy is one of the fucking coolest motherfuckers out here.
He is, dude.
Boudin before, or Boudin, I think it's pronounced.
Yeah, yeah.
Sausages, there's some beef jerky out there. The best part about this whole thing that I didn't expect was the amount of fucking food that's here.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Well, it wasn't even beef jerky. It was like some kind of South African bull tongue or something that his wife
had. Was that tongue?
Yeah, dude. You didn't know that?
I didn't know it was tongue. That's awesome. That adds a lot for me.
I was really excited. I knew it going into that it was tongue, but I try and be open-minded, I guess. But
I'm glad I didn't know it was tongue, because that would have probably fazed me. I ate it up. I ate like half of that. I got tongues by half a cow.
So, that was really cool. But so what's been your favorite part so far?
So we got seeing the show was excellent.
Yeah.
The amount of food that's here is excellent. Taking a dip was excellent.
Yeah.
At 3:30 in the morning, probably 3 or 3:30 in the morning, we were at full form, sitting around a campfire. We were at full form, people screaming and howling, laughing, we were exchanging back and forth. And the coolest thing is, the way that the relationship seems to be here with all the people here is we trade off. Like, guys will command the room for a little bit, and then they'll sit back, and then another group of guys will come in and command the room for a little bit, and then they'll sit back, and you get this really interesting dynamic, especially because we got three different campfires going, ours right here, Scott's campfire.
Yeah.
Let me take a little campfire hit of my own. Scott's campfire is kicking. That's awesome. And then they got the big bonfire all the way near the front, where probably the majority of the people are. So you got a lot of cool environments,
mm-hmm.
a lot of cool groups. Like people at this point seem to have broken into their preferred groups, but they keep switching between people. It's an excellent thing.
Oh yeah, it was like there were so many cool people I wanted to hit up and make sure I said hi to, and it was cool because you're just bouncing from one to the next, and it's like people you've known for years that you just haven't met, and then seeing how it all translates to being in person, like. Yeah, it's wild, and like getting into that space where you feel like you know somebody so well because you've listened to them talk for hours.
I haven't been fazed by meeting a single person. I'm usually in the past would be fazed by meeting new people, but none of these people are new.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been interacting with everyone here for like years.
Yeah.
But it's just, oh yeah, and there's I think when I got picked up, Ace looked at me and he said, like, nice meat suit. Yeah, that's all that it is, really, because I feel like we know one another pretty damn well.
Yeah.
It's not the meat suit part. What was your favorite part?
Oh, just everything, man. I know that's a cop-out answer, but... Well, meeting Scott, I mean, meeting everyone, but meeting Scott, I mean...
Scott is always a delight.
Yeah. Being on the Institute for a couple of years now, and I haven't met him yet, and I haven't made a point to, like, you know, go out and whatever, but it was, I mean, he's a skateboarder, man, you know, like, he's just everything, that encyclopedic knowledge that he has, you know, but at the end of the day, like, that's him, and I think it's pretty clear from everything you see and all this stuff that he's the same exact person on the microphone, so... But I don't want to fangirl too much about Scott. I get his head way too
big.
That's
why I'm actually literally holding myself back from hanging out with Scott all the time.
Yeah.
Because everyone wants to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't want to, you know, anyways. But, yeah, so... But I'm sure it gets tiring after a while to everyone. Is like there's a line of people to like, and you're just trying to chill on, you know, a Sunday afternoon or something like that. But
yeah, man, it's excellent. I love that it's like our thing.
Yeah.
Like LP's got Ford Fest, and actually Ford Fest has some pretty awesome people in it. It blends in here perfectly.
Yeah.
But there's a distinct vibe about Childeberg, which is totally different.
Yeah.
It's
cool. Robbie was talking about maybe getting a PA system for next year. It's like, I don't know about the campground or the venue or anything like that, but if...
They haven't bothered us at all.
Yeah. No, they have not. Yeah.
Yeah. People who run the campground here and the rangers here, and they've been doing checks.
Yeah.
But they came by earlier.
Yeah.
They're not bothering anybody.
No.
It's not like they're following all the rules.
Well, in the way that they have the campsites all set up, is that there's enough space between each one, it feels like, where you can feel comfortable being loud or, you know, doing your thing.
Yeah, like I said, we were playing loud music until like 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
Nobody cared.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was excellent.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad to have you on because I've been meaning to, like, you know, hook up. And I think we did an episode like a year or two ago.
What
or
are we doing?
I don't know. I know it happened.
I do so many.
I know. No. Same here. But it was like I didn't release it on my feed, but I think it was on Friends Against Government. But yeah. Well, anyways, man. Yeah, it was a real pleasure. I'm glad you hopped on the microphone. It's it's gonna be cool to get like.
I'm extremely low energy right now.
No. It's all good. But it's like I want to get like a quilt of all these fucking people.
Oh yeah. 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 We gotta do a great photo at some point.
Yes,
like
we do.
School photo. Where by height, everybody's like. Standing, that'd be great.
All serious with our arms crossed.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, very seriously.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah. All right. Well, have a good day. I'll see you around, man.
Squaw.
Peace. All right. So next up, we have Tommy Salmons, man. And I met you for the first time, I think, yesterday. But we both. How long have you been on the Libertarian Institute?
I started posting as a blogger in 2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, how did you meet Scott?
I interviewed him.
Yeah?
Yeah, he was my first ever interview in 2018.
Oh, right on, man. Yeah. Yeah, so we were talking a lot of music, dude. And I want to ask you, like, how do you get into Liberty? And then I want to talk about music a little bit.
Liberty, I guess, is kind of interesting. I don't know. I feel like everybody's story is a little bit kind of, but I wasn't like a neocon. I was kind of conservative. I considered myself like a Jeffersonian. I was really constitutional. A lot of Glenn Beck, you know, shoving Glenn Beck in my ears, accepting Mark Levin's like interpretation of the Constitution, and then I talked to Austin Peterson. He was running for president, and he called me, and we spoke for like 2 hours, and we happened to be reading the same book, The Art of Power, about Thomas Jefferson, written by John Meacham, and so we spent a lot of time talking about books, and he started asking me, hey, do you listen to this podcast? And I'm like, what the fuck is a podcast? Right? And so
wait, you were a libertarian and you didn't know what a podcast was?
Yeah, exactly. Like I wasn't even really a libertarian. I was just I called myself libertarian because like I thought that's what I was supposed to call myself because I didn't like Republicans, I didn't like Democrats. So I was like, but I didn't know what libertarian was. I had no idea what the principles were. I'd never read a fucking libertarian book in my life. This was 2015. Like, I didn't know what the hell was going on. And so Peterson introduced me to the Tom Woods Show.
Okay.
And then through the Tom Woods Show, I found the Mises Institute.
Yeah.
All right.
The gateway.
And so
drug,
it
man.
Just was like, after that, it was just like one thing after another. I watched a video, and I always point to this video. Was Judge Napolitano giving a speech at the Mises Institute, and somebody yells out, "You sound like an anarchist!" And he says, "You don't hear me denying it, do you?" And I was like, "Wait a fucking second!
Hold on,
because I love Judge Napolitano, always have."
Yeah.
And when he was like, "You don't hear me denying it," I was like, "He's not throwing Molotov cocktails.
What
the fuck's going on?"
Yeah.
So then I really started investigating, and I started reading Rothbard, and you know.
And then it all...
Yeah, it just kind of all fell into place. And I can't say when it comes to philosophy I'm as well-read as a lot of people because I'm really interested in history.
Yeah.
So I read a lot about kind of like revisionist history, especially about CIA. And I like to read the biographies of the CIA guys. So I kind of look at what they do and how the CIA operates, and I'm like, yeah. Fuck it, I'm not defending that no matter what.
Right.
You know? So, but philosophy, I think it's good to an extent. But I do think people get bogged down here.
Yeah, yeah. So you were talking about this last night. We were sitting around the fire with Scott. But you were kind of saying, like, yeah, people... You see ANCAPs, and ANCAPs are out there, and they just talk about theory, but they don't really do anything about it.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think anybody, and it's not just ANCAPs. I think Republicans, I was talking to Tho Bishop about this on Twitter the other day, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I think you want to complain and you want to be like, okay, well, they broke the supply chain by locking everybody down for a fucking year, and then they're printing $19 trillion of money and inflating the currency. And so, therefore, the prices are going up, and the poor people can't afford things. So we got to fucking, like, step out and say, well, how can we hedge our bets? Too many people don't want to take the action. They just want to talk theory. They don't want to talk philosophy. I'm bored with philosophy.
Yeah.
Philosophy ain't moving me forward, right? Like, okay, it might give me the tools I need to argue with Ben Shapiro. That's not moving me forward in my life. I'm really a blue-collar guy at heart. I mean, I've been a truck driver. I worked in the oil field for years. I worked construction. I was in the military. So it's like, yeah, but what do I do to ensure that my family is okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And so too many people are bogged down in arguing philosophy and theory and not putting in the work and the action. And therefore, people learn by example. They don't learn by being preached at. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So who's setting the example? Well, the agorists. The agorists are out there doing it.
Yeah.
And they're showing people, this is how you can live free. Harry Brown's book, How to Find Freedom in an Unfree World, right? Yeah. So this is how you live free, is by participating in agorism. So the ANCAPs, I love their philosophy. I think they're great.
Yeah.
They're brilliant. A lot of them argue me under the table any day. But the fact of the matter, can they feed their family if the supply chain completely goes under fucking water?
Right. And
philosophy's not going to feed your fucking kids, man.
Why do you think it is that people don't want to take that extra step? Do you think it's because, like, they're afraid of change? Or do you think it's because, you know, they don't want to risk it or something?
They're pussies.
Yeah.
They're pussies.
Yeah.
They don't want to act. They want to fucking be the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah.
But they don't want to get their fingernails dirty.
Yeah.
They're fucking pussies.
Yeah.
Like, period. They're fucking beltway fucking, like, you know, bourgeois fucking cunts. Pardon my language. Edit whatever you want out of
this. That's fine.
I've been drinking, as I told you. But they're fucking bourgeois fucking cunts. And they're Puritans.
Yeah.
Right? They don't want their fucking nails dirty. They don't want to fucking get involved. They don't want to get their fucking, you know, feet dirty.
Yeah.
So it's just like, all right, yeah, you keep talking, motherfucker. Keep arguing.
What the fuck?
But when your fucking family's starving, don't come to my house because I will put a bullet in your head.
Is this like what Pete says, is that you can argue while you get on the boxcar? Or, you say, this isn't ANCAPs per se, but some of them are like, it's a private company, bro, when you're getting on the private boxcar.
Yeah, well, what the fuck is private? Like, who
right,
are we talking about?
What does that mean
company?
Now?
Well, yeah, who are we talking about?
Yeah.
We talking about the people that are raking in trillions of dollars from the State Department? You know, Intutel freaking, like, handing out billions of dollars to, like, the tech companies? Who are we fucking talking about as being private?
Yeah.
Right? If anything, they're government contractors. They're no better than Blackwater.
Yeah.
And that's how you got to look at them. You know?
And it's, like, so I... The guys, when Robbie was recording, they were talking about Elon Musk for a second and basically saying, you know, Elon Musk is a rent seeker because all of his profits are through subsidies and handouts and stuff like that. But Elon Musk would say, like, how else can I compete if all the other companies are taking handouts too? You know? And, like, I think that's a cop-out, but it's just an example of how fuck the whole system is like the only way, you know, to succeed in the marketplace is to take handouts, you know. And like anyone who tries to make it good, like an Ayn Rand type of, you know, businessman or something like that, they just don't succeed because you can't compete at all. But
well, Elon Musk is fucking too smart for his own good, because all he would have to do is read fucking an agorist primer and operate parallel to the system, work in the gray economy, and he could compete. Like, nobody could stop him. That amount of money and that amount of power that Elon Musk has, that amount of popularity, if he were to fucking operate in the gray market, like, imagine the fucking damage that would do to
that would be really
goddamn
cool.
economy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? How, like, this is the thing. They, like, we're trying to hit terminal velocity here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, how are we going to hit terminal velocity? Are you going to fight the government at their own game? Or are you going to fucking fight them the same way that they were unintentionally fought in the Soviet Union or in Cambodia? But, you know, like, what are we going to do here? Are we going to keep playing the same fucking game? And I'm not, this isn't to say that I have a problem with those people that want to operate in electoral politics, because, like, I mean, there, Ron Paul converted a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people found Konkin in agorism because of Ron Paul. All right. So I don't have a problem with playing that fucking game like Dave Smith wants to do, like Tho Bishop wants to do. Like, I love those dudes. I think they're great because those are the types of people that are going to normalize, defend, and advocate agorism, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we need.
Yeah.
Because that's freedom, right? And so, but the fact of the matter is, like, if Elon operating within the system isn't helping defeat the system, he's propping up the fucking system.
Yeah.
So therefore, he's the fucking enemy.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, even it's almost like the akin to the Nuremberg defense. Like, it's the law, bro. But it's not quite the same. But it's like, oh, I gotta do this.
I just
this,
did what I was told.
Yeah.
I'm just doing what I was told.
Or I'm just playing the game, man.
Right.
Yeah. Too.
And you're a fucking bitch. You're a fucking pussy.
Yeah.
Because the game is rigged.
Yeah.
You know? And people like you and me, we're not fucking included.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Like, it's a big fucking club.
And you're not in it, bro. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you said something about, you know, people in the Soviet Union and in communist China, they were playing the agorist game.
Well, that was Cambodia.
Or Cambodia, too. They're playing the agorist game, they just don't know it.
Right.
And I think that's when agorism wins. So, like, I had someone on, Carmen Alexi, her name was. She was on the show. She grew up in communist Romania, and she escaped.
Oh, wow.
But she was talking about all of her friends who were black marketeers.
Right.
And, you know, it's not like they were, you know, because you think of black marketeers now, and you think of, like, I don't know, the cartel or, you know, drug dealers or whatever. But, and not to say there isn't a space for people like that, but in that instance, you had people who were, for lack of a better term, regular folks who are participating in the black market because that was just out of necessity. It's like, oh, you want this product? Well, it's not available except if you buy it through, you know, the underground.
Right.
Like, you want to listen to the Beatles or the Bee Gees or some shit? So you got to find someone that will bootleg records and sneak it over the Berlin Wall, you know? So, yeah, I thought that was really, really interesting.
I mean, but philosophy has its place, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There are us fucking big brains that want to read that fucking nerdy ass shit.
Yeah.
But there's the fucking shade tree mechanic trying to just make mortgage this month.
Yeah.
Trying to keep the electricity on.
Yeah.
Like, we should be, like, congratulating him.
Yeah.
Patting him on the fucking back. There's the plumber who's doing work on the side during his time off for his buddies.
Yeah.
That's agorism.
Yeah.
He doesn't know. Philosophically, he doesn't even fucking register what he's doing, but he is combating the system, right? So the fruit stand on the side of the road, right? The guy with the cardboard sign in his front yard says eggs for sale.
Right.
That's agorism.
Yeah. And people,
so you highbrow motherfuckers reading all these 1,500-page books saying, well, actually, you're not doing a goddamn thing.
Yeah.
The fucking farmer down the road who's illiterate, can't read past the third grade level, is fucking your ass up,
man. Yeah. And I like that because there's certain areas of the country where that is commonplace. Like the place I moved to, farmers will sell sides of beef.
Right.
That's just what they do. And people sell eggs, and, like, everyone's got a garden, and, you know, they bring in their extra garden to work, you know, their extra vegetables to work, and you just take from it. But, you know, and that we need more of that,
yes,
for real.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you shouldn't get bogged down in philosophy. And this is, like, what I do with my show. I'm trying to identify the problems that are around us. can't get away from the fucking political. Yeah. I'm sorry. As much as I want to be anti-political, it's damn near impossible. I have a granddaughter. Like, I gotta worry about $19 trillion printed over the last fucking year.
Right.
You know, because what is it gonna do to my five kids and my granddaughter, right? So I gotta think about these things, right? But at the same time, my actions are anti-political. I'm getting out of the system. I'm stepping. I'm trying to. I told Hotep Jesus this the other day. I was talking to him.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to operate parallel with the system. Those that want to stay involved and be involved, fuck them. Let them have it. I want to be parallel. I want to be left the fuck alone.
So incredible.
And when our interests intersect, I only hope it does not end up like Waco.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I can do. Because my goal is to set my kids up. Not to fucking pay welfare for who knows fucking who in fucking what fucking shithole country.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, I have kids to fucking take care of, right? Yeah. So the person that is killing themselves to fucking go to town and fucking take care of their family, that's the person I want to talk to.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit how smart you are. I give a shit how dedicated you are to taking steps necessary to accomplish the goals you need to accomplish in order to survive, to thrive, and to make it to the next generation. Because those are the fucking winners in life.
Yeah.
I don't care how smart you are.
Well, like, society exists in spite of the state, you know, and I think that's everything that you're talking about, too. And, like, so Thaddeus Russell had this thing, like, a renegade history of the United States, you know, talking about how...
Great book, too.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Wonderful book. And I learned a lot from it.
Yeah, that's exactly what you're talking about now, I think, man. Like, you know, it's the people who are the rule breakers that really push society right. in certain directions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Thaddeus was very instrumental, and I don't think he would consider himself an agorist. Sal was very instrumental to me, too, even though I don't agree with Sal Mayweather on everything.
Yeah.
But I learned about Konkin by talking to Sal, right? I mean, I would have never known who Konkin was if it wasn't for Sal.
Yeah.
You know? My idea, like, when I first started my podcast, I was interviewing entrepreneurs and libertarians because I was trying to find the link between entrepreneurship and libertarianism.
Mm-hmm.
I could see it. I knew there was something there. And it was 2 years later that Sal introduced, like, hey, have you read this book? And I was like, wow. Oh, no, I haven't. Badass. And that's what introduced me to the ideas of agorism. I was already participating in the gray market.
Yeah.
I just didn't know it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Most people don't know it. They're just trying to get by. They're just trying to survive.
Yeah.
And that's what, those are the people. Like, all right, so when I was a kid, I was 19, 20 years old. I got laid off, and my grandpa was putting an addition on his house. He hired me as the contractor to do the addition. Okay. So I'm doing, he had a single wide trailer, and what I was doing is I was turning it into a house.
Yeah.
So I was putting a porch on the front, and I was doing an addition with three bedrooms on the back.
Okay.
And a bathroom. Excuse me. And so I'm working my ass off. 19 years old. I'm designing this fucking thing. I'm doing all this shit. I'm figuring it out. Basic fucking knowledge. I mess up a cut. Like, I mess up a cut. I got to figure it out. It's my grandpa's fucking money.
Yeah.
I don't want him to go bankrupt.
Right.
Because I'm a fuck up. Yeah. Right? So it, like, meant something to me. But I'm working my ass off to get it done. And we essentially get it done. But I remember there was this guy who drove a dump truck. Okay? And so this guy comes rolling up in his dump truck, dropping sand for us to level out in order to do the form and set the concrete. My grandpa looked at this guy. This guy was probably in his 60s. My grandpa looked at this guy. He said, you see this guy? And I said, yeah. He goes, this guy isn't successful because he has mastered something. This guy is successful because he refuses to fail. He refuses to be kept down. He will do whatever the fuck it takes to survive. You need to be a survivor. And so, like, that stuck with me. Like, I mean, it could be some coon-ass fucking, you know, goddamn, like, philosophy, but it meant something to me,
yeah.
Right?
It's wisdom.
Right.
It's wisdom.
Because my grandpa, and he went on to explain to me, it's not, you don't need to be a master of a trade. You need to be a jack of all trades. And therefore, you can become, you can adapt to your surroundings, your situations. Right? And this is what agorism is doing. They're adapting. They're moving. They're, like, technology advances, they find a way to use technology for, blockchain and cryptocurrency, 3D printing guns, blah, 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 blah. Who's fucking doing that? It's agorist.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the innovation, that desire to live that counter-economic insurgency, so to speak, that revolution, and destroy the economy because they have been fucking robbing you of your value. They're robbing your children of their value. They're robbing everybody, every generation of their value from the time they're fucking born to the time they fucking die. They're born into debt and they die in debt. And so how do you fight back? Quit giving them your fucking energy.
For real.
Yeah.
It, well, and this is like, small business owners have been doing this too. Through all the lockdowns and everything like that, we saw Monica Perez at the event yesterday, and she was talking about she went out to dinner with some of her friends at this like Mexican restaurant, like a family owned kind of thing, and they were in the middle of eating without any social distancing or masks or anything like that. And all of a sudden, one of the workers comes up and says, "I'm so sorry, but the health inspector is coming. They're right outside. I'm going to have you, take your shit and, go out back." And they said they, left and hid behind a car and stuff. But that's what I'm talking about. I think that's what you're talking about, the fucking bravery, to do what it takes to keep going.
I can't remember the guy's name right now, but the fucking bar owner in Rhode Island. He said, "My bar is an autonomous zone."
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I'm not down with your lockdowns. They mean nothing to me. And he got arrested for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that took some fucking balls.
It did. It took some fucking balls. Yeah. And I mean, the risk to you and your family. Right. And
there was the chick in Dallas, the hairdresser in Dallas.
Yeah. On some level, it can be okay, well.
Because we got to keep feeding our fucking family, so fuck you. I don't care what you have to say.
Yeah. It's like people get really brave, I think, especially when they're in a no-win situation.
Yeah.
It's like, it's desperation. Because it's like, on one level, you could say, well, the best thing to do for her family would be to try to comply and live and to fight another day and not go to jail or whatever. But it's like, okay, I have no fucking options here. It's like, if I do what they say, I'm going to go out of business. My family's going to be destitute. At least if I defy them, I have a chance of living.
Well, there's a game theory argument here.
Yeah.
There's a game theory argument in the fact that if you look at Vietnam, right?
Yeah.
America was fighting for control. Vietnam was fighting for survival.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Who's going to fight harder?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you going to fight harder to control me, or am I going to fight harder to fucking survive?
Yeah.
And that's fucking all there is to it. And that's where we're at. And that's the mentality everybody should have right now.
Yeah.
We're fighting for fucking survival. Your children could starve to death, and the government would be okay with it. So what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
How are you going to protect your fucking children? And if you're not willing to get your goddamn hands dirty and grow a goddamn beet,
I don't know what to tell you, man.
You're a fucking pansy. You're a pussy. You're a coward. And I will fucking see you the fuck outside. Right?
It's like,
because we're not friends. We're not the same.
It's like, I don't know if you've seen that meme about the cattle being led to the slaughterhouse. And I think it's like, it looks like there's two doors to go through, but the doors really meet at a place you can't see on the way to the slaughterhouse. Yes. Okay. And it's like, what they're going to try and do, I think, is force us into certain pathways of compliance, or else they're going to make people outcasts.
Well, this is why I've been focused so hard on ESG. You've heard me talking about ESG.
Yeah, yeah.
I was talking with Scott about it last night.
Well, why don't you explain what that is for my audience.
Yeah, okay. So ESG is it stands for environmental, social, artificial and governance. All right. So this is the regulatory standards that the SEC bureaucracy has put down for investing markets, for banks, for any financial. Sorry, that was distracting.
Bird is over here in the tent just kind of doing his turtle thing.
Dude, I've been drinking. That freaked me out for a second. I was like, whoa. I was like, what happened? Oh, God, Pete's going to kill us all. No more fucking commie fucking videos for Pete. All right. So the financial institutions, the SEC has handed down these regulations. And what they're saying is they're going to judge or rank, score. Anybody know this like term? Score? I think we've heard this before. Any person, any individual, any investors, any banking institution, any corporation, based upon their ESG score. And that's got to sound annoying. I'm not trying to be annoying.
Like the social credit score.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. I was just being a fucking annoying prick about it. You know, like I know more than everybody else.
Yeah.
But I really don't. I know nothing that you don't know. So, the fact of the matter is, they're going to utilize this in order to cut off your ability to get loans and to bank. And so MasterCard has implemented a function of this in so much as you can get your climate footprint, right? And you can go to your climate calculator on the MasterCard, you know, website, and you calculate how much, you know, how much what carbon you're actually using.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, like shit like that.
How the fuck that works?
Morgan Stanley has a whole fucking graph on it. On how health and safety is under social because it is racist. Okay, because it is racist to not get the vaccine. You gotta understand, right, yeah. This whole vaccine passport thing is only a part of the fucking description. This is only a part of the story. I've been like preaching this. Nobody's picking it up. I'm trying to get them to pick it up. I'm like, I cannot be the only motherfucker talking about this because nobody listens to me.
So what's the timeline for this, you think? Like, have they
2022.
Is that when
they mentioned? Yeah, the task force has already been implemented. As of March 4th of 2021, the task force was put into place to measure the ESG scores, right? And to start measuring these things.
Yeah, and so, like, have they done a rollout? Like they're going to start implementing it in March 2022?
Yeah. No, they've already started implementing it.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't think of the name of the goddamn investment firm. Biggest investment firm in North America.
Morgan Stanley? Or?
No. It's BlackRock.
Okay. BlackRock. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So BlackRock just committed that if they did not follow ESG, it would cost them $4 million.
But that's like pennies to them, isn't it?
Maybe. But
million or billion?
Okay. No, but the way, they're simple for others to follow. Just like the Boris are trying to do. You going to follow these fuckers or are you going to fight? Which way? The national corporate. I prefer stuff that you know. I'll pass right through it, hit the guy on the other side. What the fuck, man?
Saving that man.
Yeah.
Better fuck. No, I think. I'm recording that. Well, tell everybody about your show and how they can find you. I mean, we're both on Libertarian Institute.
LibertarianInstitute.org /year-0 is where you can find me, or TommySalmons.com, which is my Substack, which I'll post all my podcasts there. I'm just a fucking guy, dude. I'm nothing special. It's fucking weird, like being treated like I'm something special. I'm just a dude, man. I'm very opinionated.
Yeah.
And I can be a dick sometimes, but I'm just a dude.
Well, I think people are attracted to people who are opinionated, you know, that stand for something and are outspoken about it. I think that attracts people, so... Yeah. Well, it was great to meet you, dude, and I'm glad that we could record, but we're going to have to record again.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again, for sure.
Right on, brother. Okay. All right, so now I got Cody with Agora Brewing. Cody, we've been friends for a while, too, and so it's really cool to get to meet you.
Yeah, it's so good to hang out in person, really. I mean, yeah. That's kind of the whole theme of this event, right? Just go meet your online friends in real life and realize that you're not alone in the world.
Yeah. No, it's a real white pill, dude. And so you've been into brewing for a while, and is that's kind of your vehicle for agorism?
A little bit. I mean, I do want to go. So, you know, we just heard the whole spiel about agorism and how it's like a gray market, black market kind of thing and fuck the state. I do want to go white with it, but that's been my hobby right for the past, since 2019, March of 2019. And the whole thing right now is I brew some mead. I try to make things that I think are interesting and wild and out there that I can bring down here to Childeberg every year and sort of see how the crowd reacts to it so that eventually I can say, hey, these are my staples and really look towards not only do I know that it's good, but I have these friends out here at Childeberg that might be willing to help me out with getting to that point where I can make a lot of it. And, you know, if I start a business, I get that investment base, right? So,
yeah.
So this is like a big, think of it as like an advertising opportunity for me. Like
yeah.
Well,
one thing that you know, you were saying. So first, what got you into brewing, and how long have you been doing it?
Well, it's funny actually. I was watching the Modern Rogue on YouTube. Some of you may know, and they're like this goofy like adults but drunk doing Mythbusters. And one of the things they did is they had a historical European martial arts guy come over. And you know, as such, he's really into like Renfests and things like that. And so he comes over and shows them how to make mead, and they're just in their garage dicking around, and the guys are, you know, being complete assholes and you know, sucking the mead through the tube by their mouth. And but the process itself is pretty simple, and it's a lot easier than beer. And so that was the thing, is I wanted to get into beer, but I saw this video and I said, hey, that looks a lot simpler and a lot less messy. And I tried some and I said, you know what, I want to play with this, right? And so there's a lot of flavors, like what I've bring. So for Children 3 here, I brought 8 flavors that were scheduled, and then another 2 that were mystery flavors that just happened to turn out really good, and I said, I gotta share this.
Yeah.
Several of those flavors happen to have jalapenos in them, for example, right? So I grew up eating like habanero jelly with cream cheese on salted crackers. Like,
oh, that sounds real good, man.
I know. That was like, okay, if I can replicate that, because I've got this honey-based alcohol, what the hell do I do with that? There's people putting jalapenos in this stuff? Wait, why don't I do like jalapenos and make like some citrus hops for that citrus?
Yeah.
Go with that, right? And so that's one of them that I brought. That is the one that you may have seen on Twitter circulating the Friends Against Government meme that says, do you want $5 or a kick in the dick? And that's the jalapeno and hops, right? So, but I've also got other flavors. I ended up doing the same thing, but I took out the hops and I added pineapple juice, right? And so I'm just doing all kinds of crazy crap like that and trying to be as unique as possible with my brewing. Because I know, like, if you go to the regular grocery store, your local liquor store, and you find a mead, and it's just going to be like the sweetest thing you've ever had. And if you like candy, go for it. But most of us, I think, if you're a beer drinker or a whiskey drinker or a wine drinker, you're going to appreciate what I do a little bit more. I try to incorporate a lot of the things from that with like acidity and dryness.
This was one of these,
you know, just all these crazy flavor combinations, right?
And that's super eclectic, because like I'm trying to think, I've never heard of a meadery. Like you go to distilleries or brewing companies or whatever, but like have you ever been to a meadery?
I have not, although I do know one local team in Kansas. They do make a very good sweet mead. But I believe they're at least a few hours away from me, and I haven't had the chance to get out there yet. But there are, I mean, what you hear of most of the time, if it's really high quality stuff, is going to be like somebody's got a farm and they happen to keep bees on it, and then they took some of that excess honey that they weren't selling at the farmer's market, or maybe just, you know, something that they kept specifically for making mead, and they call that an estate breed. And so if I've got, you know, this sort of like down to earth part of the land thing going on with my farm, then I can have this estate mead, and that's like sort of a distillation of everything, because these bees are pulling in pollen from all of your crops, right? So if you think of that as like a distillation of what you did and all the work that you put in over the past year and harvested, right? that those can go for very high dollar, and I would love to get into that, but you just don't see it very often. It's still a very niche market, right?
That has to be really good for, like, the immune system, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and for, like, allergies and shit. Yeah, well, everything in moderation, I guess, but... Yeah, well, speaking of our livers, are we going to be doing, like, a taste testing later?
We are, so this is, my appearance today is in preparation for the second annual Agora Brewing Meat Tasting. I had 5 last year, 8 this year, plus 2. I've got a card table set up across the way here, and as soon as I'm done recording, we're going to go ahead and start drinking, so...
I can't fucking wait, dude.
yeah, it's ridiculous. And I guarantee you, like, last year, I had some pretty banging flavors. I think this year, every single one.
Yeah,
so I'm ready to go.
Yeah, well, you did a whiskey flight tasting last night at like 1:30 or 2 or something like that.
So that goes back to the flavor thing, right? I started as a whiskey enthusiast, and so I was like, well, I'm gonna bring, you know, for my wine friends and my beer friends who maybe don't know a lot about whiskey, and I wanted to walk through some of the different styles that you're gonna find around the world. So I had a couple of different kinds of American whiskey. I had Elijah Craig, classic bourbon, Four Roses for like a rye heavy bourbon, and then I did 2 More Do Irish, Monkey Shoulder just as a basic like Scotch blend, and then I stepped it up real hard with the Lafroig 10. So anybody who knows that name, you know what I'm talking about.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because I skipped to the end about that, and you were like, so there's a certain like flavor aftertaste to it that is really hard to place on your palate, and what did I say? It tasted like black licorice at first.
I don't remember if it was you that brought up black licorice.
No, it was me. Yeah.
Okay, so because you were sitting over there, that's where I heard it. Okay, yeah. So the Lafroig 10. If you haven't had it, I'll give a huge shout out to them to the Islay Scotches. Look up that style specifically. It is a heated Scotch. So they actually dry their barley with. Instead of wood, which imparts that very smoky, very earthy flavor. I had one guy telling me he was getting like a mushroom flavor out of it.
Oh, yeah.
I think plays to that heat. But yeah, so you, Pat, said black licorice.
Yeah.
And then I sat there and I said, okay, let's go around the table a little bit here. And then I said, okay, now if I tell you this, you're not going to be able to think of anything else, which is why I wanted to wait. But and I love it, but you're going to have to get over this, because once you love it, you love it. But Lafroig has this like rubber note. It's known as the rubber note. And the first thing I say to people is, it kind of tastes like burnouts in a parking lot, doesn't it? And they go, yes, it does.
Yes, it
and
does.
It's good. It's like you're like sinking down into the mud of a swamp and becoming the swamp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty metal, man.
I love showing that to people, man. Yeah, I know you're a big fan of that doom metal. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's like that, but in your mouth.
Yeah, well, freaking awesome. And I'm so glad that we met each other here, man. And where did you get that Peaceful Treason sticker?
So Kaja Kord of Peaceful Treason is going around handing out new Peaceful Treason stickers. They've got the American flag upside down and backwards to symbolize treason, and the Peaceful Treason triangle thing going in there, mixing it up, looking real pretty.
That is fucking sick,
these
dude.
These are great. I'm putting them all over my last night.
Yeah, I need a couple of those. Yeah. Well, I hit that up. I think we got... Cotton up next.
Okay.
But I'm really looking forward to your tasting. So tell everybody again where they can find you.
Okay. So I am Agora Brewing formerly on Twitter. You can find me on Mastodon nowadays at thebag.social. And then I'm also on Discord if we happen to meet in some servers. I'm sure you can look me up there. But then the main thing is the agorabrewing.home.blog. Brewing new ideas since 2019.
Okay, yeah, and you're in my Discord channel, which is libertyweekly.net/Discord, so I think people could find it, I guess.
If you need to find me, you can get in there, look in the members, and get my contact that way.
Otherwise, I guess you can search on Discord, right? You could add search people.
I think you can, but other than that, like, if you go to my website, I've got a Proton Mail email there, agora.brewing@protonmail.com. Anything you need to ask, go for it. I'm a pretty open guy. And just happy to share what I do with all of us Liberty folk.
Awesome, man. Yeah, well, thanks for coming on, dude.
Yeah, dude.
All right, so I'm here with Cotton Arcus on Twitter. How are you doing, man?
I am fucking chilling.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Man? Well, so I've been trying to make the rounds to everybody, but we haven't talked yet. So you want to introduce everyone, or introduce everyone to your show and what, who you are, what you do?
Right. So I do Slurp Gang with Ace, who I am looking at right now, and Jay, who is Jewish. And, he's not here because, I don't know, he sucks. And, yeah, I don't like him.
Where does he live?
He lives in Miami, Florida.
He does, okay, yeah. So. It's a little trek to get here.
Well, no, but, well, listen, don't justify him not coming, because he sucks. Because, like, him and Bird hung out for, like, 8 days before this.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
Bird flew from Florida to here, and, like, I don't know. He could have come. He was planning on coming, but I don't know. Dude, he sucks. I swear to God, he sucks so bad.
Wait, so this is a great endorsement of your podcast, right?
Well, yeah, okay, yes, I say that because it's me and Ace constantly battling against Jay, and that's entertaining, I'll say that. I can't say that it's, like, morally good or anything, but it's very entertaining, and, yeah, Jay sucks.
Well, was this born, so how did you decide to start your show?
So, I don't think he's here anymore, but me and Liberty Zero, or you can go on Twitter and find him at Memeable Agorist, I think. We did a show called Dissecting Liberty, and we ended it maybe earlier this year, I think. And he's around here somewhere. But,
no, right, exactly.
And then I started talking to Ace. Like, I knew Ace on Twitter, and I knew Jay. Like, I met Jay in person. He had been stretching the podcast. And, like, we hung out in person last year sometime. But we talked on Discord all the time, and we'd be on voice chat and cutting up. And, oh, fuck, I don't remember. What's Duncan's app? The real Duncan Wayne came up with this name for, like, kind of a group on Discord called Slurp Gang.
Yeah.
And I don't know, he's oddly obsessed with, like, mouth-related things. Like, we were reading out, like, the messages he sent featuring the word mouth. And that's just fucking wild. And so he came up with Slurp Gang. I don't know the joke behind it. But, so, that's broadly the group that we're in. And, so, Ace, Jay, and I decided to start this podcast, because, like, we have a really good dynamic, just kind of fucking around. And, we decided to call it Slurp Gang. And I guess, like I mentioned to you before we started recording, it has kind of compound vibes.
Yeah.
Just, like, very schizophrenic. Like, we make jokes about it being, like, a schizo-autist podcast. Because it's, like, at the same time, it's super random, and then also we get weirdly obsessed about shit. And, like, we'll get extreme. Like, right now, like, we're going to record later, and I'm going to be very obsessed with Jay fucking up on the weather machines on the first night of Childerberg. Yeah. And I mean, he fucking, go ahead,
we're gonna get his ass.
We're gonna play his fucking ass, I swear to God.
So he's the one that made the biblical thunderstorm come.
Yeah, he sucks.
Yeah. Well, God damn it, Jay.
I know. Yeah, I don't like it. But yeah, and you know, I know Mr. Bird, our artist, is a fan of Miami, but I don't know. Jay's from there, and that's not a good endorsement. But I don't know.
So what? You're pretty active on Twitter, right? And there's, like, it's not Tower Gang. Are you part of Tower? Are you in the Tower Gang group?
I've never once been on Tower Gang.
Okay.
I've been invited. But I've never.
So, what do you do on Twitter, though? Like, do you troll people, or do you just, like, fuck with the heads of
no, dude,
liberals?
I tweet piss, cum, and shit jokes on Twitter. That's about it.
So but your podcast is just about, you know, like shooting the shit and kicking back and stuff. Like, does liberty like factor into it at all?
Yeah. So, thank you. We got some mead.
Yeah, we're tasting weed. Tradition. Okay, right on. All right, we got some. This is the first mead I've ever had. So, Prosh.
Okay, we'll try it. It's
called
it.
Free Ross.
Free Ross. It's called
Free Ross.
Tell me about it.
Ching Ching.
Ching Ching.
It's pretty good.
Tell me about it.
Have you ever had me?
What are you feeling right now?
It's good. There's a dog hair in it, though. Yeah, yeah, keep it in there.
It's the brain eating the people.
It does kind of taste like grape juice, a little bit.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, I guess so. So, do you know what meat is?
It's honey.
It's honey wine.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's the same exact thing as wine, but instead of grapes, they use honey.
Oh, okay.
What ferments alcohol is sugar. So instead of the sugar in grapes, they use the sugar in.
I'm just surprised by how much it tastes like wine, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you had mead before?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Last year.
Yeah.
No, there's enough for everyone's mead.
They're recording.
Okay, so, yeah, I had it last year, and,
oh, shit. Yeah.
Good as shit, so, is Cody on Twitter?
No,
so...
He was,
yeah. So, Agora Brewing, I don't know.
No, yeah, he was just on. I introduced him as Cody.
Okay,
yeah,
cool. Yeah, he makes all the meads.
Yeah, he is. He's figured shit out, you know, like trial and error, and then testing stuff out here on us.
Yeah. Last year, it was funny because, like, you know, last year was the COVID craziness.
Yeah.
And we all hung out, like, I guess where Camp 30 is this year. And, like, Jacob, who organizes Childerberg, got, like, 4 campsites. Like, now we have 8 or 9. But last year we got 4, and we only used, like, 2 or 3. Agora Brewing showed up with his mead. And he's like, all right, let's do a tasting. And we went through, like, the 6 meads he brought. And we got decently, you know.
Yeah.
We got our heads right. And then every single time another person showed up, he's like, all right, let's do a tasting. And so, I mean, like, because I was the second person to show up last year.
Oh, no.
And, I mean, I've got...
Well, I was like, last night we were doing the whiskey, you know, sampling tasting, and he has like 6 whiskeys.
Oh, at Ironwood?
No, here.
Oh, here?
Yeah, yeah, he brought a whole bunch of like whiskey with them, and we were tasting
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And we were tasting it, and each one is like, I don't know, a shot. So that's like 5 or 6 shots. And I just had to, I had to call it a night.
Yeah, man. Like, yesterday, we had a, like, incredibly near where we're recording right now, we had a very powerful council meeting.
Yeah.
I'll say that. There was a lot of beers, a lot of substances.
Was there, like, robes and torches and stuff?
There should have been.
In a stone owl?
I'll say that much. Okay. You know, but, you know, we came unprepared. We're not incredibly used to having these very, very powerful, very
good
council meetings doing a lot of science. Probably a lot of science.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing we did learn is that you cannot piss into diesel tanks.
Yes, yeah.
Because it creates crystalline structures. And
immediately,
the guy that told us is right over there.
Thank you.
I'm not that bad. But yeah, I mean, we laughed for 4 hours,
and much laughter ensued.
Much laughter. If I can remember the guy's name,
well, my feet are
shut him out. But he said the funniest fucking thing. He was like, everyone was drunk. You know,
yeah.
But he was like, oh shit, dude, have you heard of the Real History Channel?
What?
Is that H2?
I have no idea.
Oh.
We were like, I don't know what that means. But like, he pulled up a website, and I didn't look at the website. He pulled it up on his phone. There were a lot of black and white images and a lot of numbers because I saw it. You know, he was sitting next to me, and he was going to show it to us. And I was kind of looking, and I don't know what all these numbers are, and I don't know all these black and white, but that's the real History Channel.
Shit.
And I mean, he was dropping some truth bombs last night.
Like what?
How politically correct is your podcast?
Yeah, my podcast?
Yeah.
Well, I'll just go in. I'll make the decisions later.
Okay, all right. So at one point we were in the middle of a conversation, and he was like, all right, well, yeah, no, that's the thing. You know, that's what the Nazis got right.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't remember what he said after that. Like, Steppy, do you know him?
Yeah.
Please know on Twitter.
Yeah.
He fell down, literally. He fell down in the grass and fucking rolled around laughing at that
shit.
He just kept saying stuff like that. He was wild. That's the cool thing about Childeberg is because, you know, you get, like, this wide variety of people. For Slurp Gang and Timeline Earth, which are, like, you know, we have, like, a group around Slurp Gang that we orbit around, and then we kind of broadly orbit Timeline Earth. So that's, like, a very specific group.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there are a ton of people that are, they may like Timeline Earth, but they're not, you know, it's like a direct descendant of Timeline Earth. You know?
Oh, right, yeah.
There are people I've met, like there are a lot of people I've met that, like, follow me on Twitter and stuff, and I look them up, and I'm like, oh, shit, you know, let me follow you, and you're awesome. Stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
But there are a ton of people that I don't know on Twitter.
His appearance,
like,
he looks
right,
mystery,
yeah.
I think there's been like 180 people.
Yeah.
Which is fucking insane.
Yeah.
And then last year there were like 35.
Yeah. That's like, is that exponential growth?
I don't know, dude. I don't know. You know what?
Multiple times growth?
If you think it's exponential growth, then I think it is. And if two or more people believe in something, that makes it a fact.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Yeah, I've heard this before.
Yeah. So,
I don't know where, but...
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. All right. It's a fact. Like there are a lot of people this year that I don't even know and that don't know me.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucking incredible. Like,
yeah.
The reach, you know, that's awesome.
And I think for every person that is here, I don't know how many more people aren't here that would have been here if they could be here.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, the whole... Would you say most libertarians are on... No, probably not on Twitter, but like,
no,
it's...
Okay, I have some...
You know what I mean about that? Yeah.
So in 2020, I went to Mises U at the Mises Institute, and I was amazed at the amount of people that were not on Twitter.
Yeah?
Like, that broke my fucking brain. Because, like, I got really into the Mises Institute from Twitter.
Yeah.
And so, like, there were, like, two people that were on Twitter, and I was, like, I know there's one guy named Marcel.
What is this? Hold on. What?
This is the Vikings blood.
The Vikings blood? Okay, yeah. Okay.
Cotton, or whoever's sitting that way, looking this way, just want to give you a thumbs up when you're both good. I'll interact
with us. Oh, right on. No, okay. It's all good. It's all good. Yeah.
Cheers.
I like it. Yeah, it's good. It looks like, it looks like wine, but...
Oh, that's what you have.
Red wine?
Yeah, but it's sweeter.
Mm-hmm. Sweet blood. It's diabetic blood.
Yeah, there you go. Very, very sweet. I do want to say, can I shout out my podcast real quick?
Oh, for sure.
So, I'm pretty sure I mentioned it 20 fucking times already, but I'm drunk. So, I do Slurp Gang with Ace_Arcus and Peaceful Slade on Twitter, and we're going to record later, and we're going to do the whole Agora Brewing.
The whole flight before, beforehand?
No, during.
Oh, during. Okay, yeah.
With Bird Arcus and Paul Campitt's going to be here.
That's going to be great.
Mr. Nick Ashley.
Yes.
Gonna be
Mr. Nick Ashley.
Mr. Nicholas. he's gonna be there. So I forget what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. Well, should we call it there, or do you want to keep going? Okay. Yeah. Well, let's see. Dude, I wonder how this is gonna turn out because there's like. The audio is fucked on this. It's like, yeah, some of it's really loud and some of it's really quiet. I put it through a filter, though, so it shouldn't, yeah. No, but I do Auphonic. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
Yeah, no, use CleanFeed.
Okay. Okay.
So it's, you get 3 hours a month.
Yeah.
But it's so much better than Auphonic.
Oh, really?
Okay. Do you know Derek is not gay on Twitter?
I haven't heard of that.
Pirate
Bay. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. I've heard of that, but I have, we have, like, so there's a media server that a guy has a Plex channel,
and
he just pay, you know, I pay him on Patreon, like, $5 a month.
Yeah, Derek and I share a thing.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
We can stream each other's shit.
Yeah, yeah, and he takes requests and shit, so.
Oh, yeah, he'll download stuff and just upload it, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's the greatest, and. It's like, why? I don't know why anyone would watch TV anymore. I mean, it's pretty easy to find shit like that. I guess you need to know somebody, but yeah, it's pretty easy to find that kind of stuff.
Well, and then the other thing is there's not much, that much good TV.
No, there isn't. You know? And you got to sit through commercials and shit, and then, yeah.
I mean, you know, I think, so I'm watching Justified right now. Have you
watched
that?
No, no.
It's pretty good. It's Mr. TLE Pod.
Yeah.
Recommended. I've been on the TLE Pod diet lately.
Yeah.
So I watched Twin Peaks. I watched the first season of True Detective. And then now I'm watching Justified, and that's a shit.
What's the premise?
For Justified?
Yeah.
So it's this cop. He's a deputy U.S. Marshal out of Miami. And then he gets in trouble, and he gets transferred back to his hometown in Kentucky. And, like, he's dealing with all, like, his high school, you know, buddies or whatever that are, like, cooking meth now.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, he's, like, but, you know, reigniting old flames and stuff. And, you know, it's kind of a cheap cop show, but it gets a hell of a lot better. Like, the first season fucking sucks.
Yeah.
It's silly as shit. Like, I was laughing the entire time. Like, it wasn't bad enough.
Is it,
you just couldn't watch it.
Is it campy? Yes, you know, okay, yes, yeah.
The first season's very campy. But the second season's fucking good. Like, I've been pretty riveted.
One of my favorite shows is Stargate.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's campy as shit, man. It's like back in the 90s they had Stargate. It's like, you know, you got your Star Wars and your Star Trek, but Stargate is where it's at, man. Right. It's like the whole premise is like they find a ring that's buried in Egypt, and they've been studying it for a long time, and they learn how to turn it on. Basically, it's a portal to another planet halfway across the galaxy, and they find all these other rings that are like, it's a network of stargates that you dial in and you find the address to different places. But then it's like all about humanity creating the Stargate program and dealing with different fucking aliens and stuff. So, but I think it's funny because they have episodes about, like, limited hangouts, kind of, where trying to keep it a secret and lying to the American people about it, and, yeah, so it's interesting. Like, there's even an episode where there's a TV show in the TV show that is the TV show. Like, so there's this show on TV called, in the show called, like, Star Explorers. That's basically the same thing as what the show is. So it's like, it makes you wonder if Stargate itself is, like, really what's happening.
Right.
But they're teasing it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Limited hangout kind of thing.
Yeah, have you watched Black Mirror?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, that sounds like...
Oh, yeah.
...the premise that Black Mirror
would be. So is... Oh, I see what you mean. Like, but you're not saying that Black Mirror itself is, like, a limited hangout? Like, some of the episodes are?
Well, maybe.
I guess it could be.
I don't know. There's some pretty gay episodes.
Yeah, they're literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I, you know, like, one of their gayest, like, literally gayest episodes is probably one of their best.
Yeah.
You know, like, there was an episode where this woman, like, okay, I'll back up. There was this thing.
I think I know the one you're going to talk about.
Mr. Nick Ashley's laughing at me.
Shut up, Nick. No.
So there was a program where people could upload their consciousness to.
Yeah, yeah.
So when they got older, they could just live on in this virtual reality. And, like, this woman, you know, it's gay because this woman started a relationship with another woman. So, literally gay. But it was pretty good.
Well, is the whole premise that, like, she falls in love with another woman's consciousness while they're in a virtual nursing home or some shit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's been a while since I've seen one.
The one that really fucks with me is that Black Mirror episode where... Hey, thanks.
If you don't mind, don't bring me in.
There was that episode where a woman's fiancé dies or her husband dies, and... she, like, won't accept his death, so she orders a android from this company that basically replicates what he was.
Right, yeah. And that's the dude that was an Ex Machina. Have you seen that?
Yes. I love that movie,
that's
dude.
A really good movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of my favorites, and I haven't seen it in a long time, but really good, there's some... Awesome. It reminded me of, like, a Kubrick film in all the good ways, you know? Like, thank you. Which one is that?
This is the Muscadine.
Okay.
Okay, good.
This is Cotton's creation. You didn't want any.
No, I don't, because we're going to record a Slurp Gang episode later, and we're going to do the whole thing.
Gotcha.
All of them.
So, this is...
There's all of them left.
Well, I've talked to Gore Brewing about it, so... he's not here. Jay's not here. Yeah, dude, he's Jewish.
I love his impression.
Wait, what?
That's him that does the impression.
Oh, no, I do the impression.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, give me an impression. Give me someone to do. I'll do an impression.
Like a New York Jew complaining about the weather.
I'm a New York Jew.
You don't say who you're doing. How the fuck do you do that every time?
I'm from Manhattan, and the weather is so... I got so bad allergies, and I can't...
For the love of God!
The weather, I just can't handle it. I'm taking a leave. My nose is so stopped up, I can't handle the weather. So, Black Mirror.
Black Mirror. Ex Machina. That was a good one. That was a good fucking good fucking TV show. This meat is starting to get to me too.
Really?
Well, it can't be that much, right? It's like a thimbleful.
Well, like a bottle of meat is like
a bottle of wine.
Yeah. So it's right. Like 20% alcohol for the whole bottle. Like,
making sure he never does that again.
Which is like twice that at least. So, like, I think, like, the average across his whole, what he bought is maybe, like, 50%.
Yeah.
But, like I said, last year, we just kept trying it.
Knocking it back.
And it creeps up on him. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess I did have some whiskey earlier today, so it's like, yeah. Forgot about that.
I've had double digit views.
Yeah.
I've lost count. I forget.
The champagne of beers, man.
Champagne, yeah. I just had the High Life corn syrup beer.
Fuck yeah.
We learned recently that all Coors products, which Miller is a part of, have corn syrup.
Oh, he was?
And it makes you gay.
There's soy in it too.
There's
right?
Soy.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So, Nick. So, when we had you on, we were talking about the penis to ass ratio.
Go ahead and speak into the microphone. I can't guarantee all of this will go on the Libertarian Institute, by the way.
Cotton had a question for me, so what's up, Cotton?
Give me a smooch. Okay, so I already asked, they heard the question. So
what's the question?
Yeah, what's the question?
When we had you on Slurp Gang, we talked about the penis to ass ratio.
No, that was with Clint from Liberty Lockdown.
I thought we talked to you about it because I was on the tower.
No, we talked about it on the tower, but that was Sam Kniff that came up with it. That introduced it to us, and we talked about it with Robbie Bernstein on Tower Gang Podcast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's bullshit.
Wait, the dick to ass ratio?
Okay, so I'm going to go into it.
All right, let's go back.
All right, so our co-host, Jay, came up with the dick to height ratio.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, the very simple...
The Jew, right?
Yeah, the Jew. Yeah, the Jewish one. So it's your dick length and inches over your height and inches.
Okay.
And, like, the closer you get to point one, like, the better you are.
Okay. This sounds like that episode of South Park where Randy's talking about the yaw of
right,
the penis,
right.
The adjusted. Thank you. The adjusted penis length.
Right.
Yeah.
But so that's the. And then,
oh fuck. I don't know which one this is, but it's good. That's Jared. Jared, by the way.
Jared.
Yeah.
Long hair.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, I wish he told us which one it was.
It's okay. He doesn't want to interrupt, but we're not doing anything.
Yeah, I'm going to get in the red zone. I'm excited.
I mean randomly.
But that's good, huh?
This might be my favorite so far.
Really?
Yeah, do you want to try it? It's light. It's very light and refreshing.
You don't have the coof, do you?
Fuck no. I think I had it already. I was one of those people where I thought I had it in, like, January.
That's more of like you can taste the alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
More.
Oh yeah, you can.
But
yeah.
That's more of like a.
It almost tastes European to me.
It tastes like kind of a like maybe a rum or something with some water in it.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Mouth noises.
Yeah. What are we talking about?
This is going to be a bitch to edit. Oh yeah, South Park and Randy like. He gets insecure about his tiny dick, so...
on the fucking Tower Gang podcast, they were talking about the dick to ass.
Wait, I thought we don't talk about the Tower Gang.
Okay, the police podcast.
No. You said we didn't talk about the Tower Gang.
No, I think I said we don't talk about Jay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he's Jewish.
I tried the cannabis.
But so we were talking about on the Tower Game. Who is it that talked about the dick to ass ratio?
He was.
Okay.
It was somebody on Twitter, Sam K. Niff. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but Sam Niffin or Sam Niff or what. He was in the live chat when we were on YouTube streaming the Tower Gang, who was trying to get us to ask Robbie about the ass to penis ratio.
So did we ask Robbie about? You asked him about it on your episode.
Sam is not part of the Tower Gang podcast. He's kind of in the group, like, as a general, like, in the circle.
Is he here?
No, he's not.
Okay.
But anyway, what's that?
I don't know.
You were going to ask about it. We did ask Robbie about it.
Yeah, what did he say?
Robbie actually measured the distance from the middle of his hip to the end of his ass cheek.
Wow.
And said since his neck is 6 inches, it was 1-to-1 because his ass was 6 inches.
So he's perfect, basically, right?
The higher the ratio, I don't know if it's better or worse.
But okay, so like I thought when we talked to Clint, like
dick to height ratio, y'all talked about.
But we also talked about the dick to ass ratio, and like water was involved. Like you had to stick your ass in the water.
The volume of your ass.
How much the water went up?
Fucking A. Jesus.
We need another microphone. So the dick can be on.
I don't know.
I don't know. Nick doesn't know.
That's all right. Well, I think I'm going to pack it up.
All right.
But,
holy shit, this is incredible. I can't believe I get to live this life.
Amazing. Well, I'm definitely going to put the full unedited version out on one of my feeds.
Okay.
Whether it's going to be, you know, yeah. I have a few, so get ready for that, motherfuckers. So...
All right.
Yeah, I've been recording this whole time, almost. Yeah. So, all right. Well, plug one last plug. So, where can everybody find?
Can I do two?
Yeah.
All right.
You can do as many as you want.
All right. So, check out at Cotton Marcus. That's where I am. And then Slurp Gang is my podcast. You can go to slurpgangpod.com and find all our shit. Ace _ Arcus is here at Childerberg. Did you? I'm not there.
Kyle. No.
I kind of feel like with a J.
But, Jew. J-O-O. That's his name.
The J-O-O. But you can find it on slurpgangpod.com.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, right on. It was a pleasure to meet you, Cotton. We're going to party it up tonight. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
So, all right, peace.
How long was that, Pat?